Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Kirk Martin, founder of Celebrate Calm, America's Calm Coach. It is Monday, March 28th. We are live from Nashville, Tennessee. Happy to be back home after about 25 days on the road and have a lot of stuff to get into. I've got 17 different topics we're going to try to hit. So let me just go ahead and jump right in. Just want to let you know, a lot of the questions today are from people, and usually how they start off is saying, I have a strong-willed child. And I will tell you, I love strong-willed kids. I prefer strong-willed kids. You should love your strong-willed kids. You should prefer that they have a strong will. It is much more difficult to parent and teach these kids, but when we can learn what's going on inside their heads and in their brains, when we can understand what's truly inside there instead of always kind of misinterpreting, or maybe it's just we're projecting how we think onto how they think, or sometimes it's we just don't get them because many of you are project manager types. You are engineers. You may be a more compliant, easygoing person who just kind of follows all the rules. And then you have a child who comes out of the womb, and when they're 3 and 4 years old, you see this child who's so bright and who just won't follow directions or just won't do it maybe the way your other kids did or maybe the way you've always done things. And it's scary and it's difficult, but I will tell you the future absolutely belongs to the more strong-willed kids. I have a very strong-willed 17-year-old, and I'm so happy that as a teenager, he has a strong will. Casey does not follow what the other kids do. They either follow him or he just doesn't participate in it. He's the one who, when they set up things to do, they're like, I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. You want to sit in the basement and text? Casey's the one who comes up with a plan. He's the one who comes up with the time they're going to meet, and he makes things happen. And I like that. And you know what? He's got a little bit of attitude. And I like the attitude, too, because you have to have a little bit of attitude in this world to not only survive, but to thrive. And I like it when there's vision behind it, when kids have a sense of purpose, when they feel good about themselves and they're confident, then that attitude can be put into overcoming obstacles. And that's something we tell kids all the time. Hey, don't fight people, fight obstacles. What's getting in the way of you accomplishing your objective? And for many of you, the hard truth is, if you have teenagers and middle school kids who have kind of shut down, the answer at this point isn't laying down the law. You've already done that. You've tried every single consequence that there is, and it just doesn't work because they don't feel good about themselves and they don't have any vision, and so they're just going to fight you until we find something and help them find something they want to fight for. And that's a big key in our kids. When you find that, whatever that vision is, that those gifts and passions inside your kids, you will see them come alive. I've seen it in my own son. I've seen it in thousands and thousands of kids that we've worked with. So another thing that's kind of top of mind for me is stop trying to change us so much. A lot of your kids and a lot of people like me, you know what the truth is? We're pretty comfortable with ourselves. We know that we're different. We know that we have some odd quirks. And the truth is, I'm okay with that. Most of your kids are okay with their quirks. They're okay with knowing that they're going to swim upstream in life. You know who has the problem with it? People around us. You as a parent, that's so much anxiety of like, I know, but if my child would just do it this way, it would be so much easier. Why can't he just get on board? Why can't he just get with the program? And here's the real question. Why can't he just do it my way? Because my way is the right way. And you know what the truth is? That's not always right. Your way isn't always the right way. Sometimes there isn't a right way. Sometimes your kids have to pursue their vision and their passions. And it's not about you. It's about them. And that's really hard. So first question of the day is this. Your kids are kind of comfortable with themselves and who they are. Are you? Are you comfortable with your kids? And I'm not talking about kids being defiant, disrespectful, kids not doing their chores, kids with a bad attitude, kids who are violent, kids who are calling you names. No, I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with them being like that. We don't excuse inappropriate behavior, and I don't excuse bad attitudes, but that's not what we're talking about. I think you know what I mean. Are you comfortable with the way your kids are made? Are you comfortable with the fact that they do ask why a lot, that they may push the limits a little bit, that they're looking for different ways to do things? I'll tell you, once you get comfortable with that, not even getting comfortable, but really understanding your kids inside and out, when you get comfortable and you understand them inside and out, you will see you have nothing to fear with these kids. And some of us, we have a lot of fear, right? It's like, hey, if my kids can just make it to adulthood, I think they'll be okay. But I will tell you, it will breed confidence in you and your kids, and you'll see them in a different way. So we'll talk about a little bit of that today. One of the questions we got in was this. Hey, I've got a little daughter, and she's always carrying little things around in her pockets. That is very, very common. If you know that our approach is that we don't react out of anxiety to outward behavior, outward manifestations of behavior, things that our kids do, because usually we're reacting to the wrong thing and it's sending us down the wrong path. What we prefer to do is proactively meet kids' needs. There are three primary needs that our kids have. There's a need for order and structure and consistency. That's one need. There's a need for stimulation, for their brains to be stimulated, because many of your kids have brains that don't get enough blood flow. They don't get enough dopamine. Their brains are understimulated, and so they're always doing things for stimulation, whether it's poking their brother, almost poking their brother, looking at their brother just to get attention, provoking us at times, arguing with us, all of the fidgeting that they do, procrastination, hanging upside down off of the sofa. So many different behaviors are about getting stimulation for their brains. And then some of our kids also have sensory needs. So if we know that our kids have these three needs, how can we proactively meet those needs so that many of these behaviors become normalized, or many of them actually go away or are minimized or just don't cause any issues? Well, in the case of kids who carry little things around in their pockets, it's completely about this need for order, structure, and control. And because this, think about this. When we were kids, we had so much more ownership, even control over our lives. We were gone for 3-4 hours at a time in the afternoon, on weekends. Our parents didn't know half of the stuff we were doing, even being mischievous, doing things. It was good for us because we learned how to play with other kids. We learned how to work the rules out. We learned how to be a leader or let other kids be the leaders. We learned how to work out fights and issues and battles, and we just did stuff. We made decisions all the time. Our kids today, from the time that they're little, from 6:15 in the morning till 9:15 at night, an adult is telling your child every single thing to do. They're telling your kids how to do it, when to do it, why to do it, how to do it. And the kids have very little control, or what we would like to say, ownership over their lives. I don't want to give my kids control over my home, and I don't want to give them control over my classroom, but I do want to give them some ownership. So these kids, little kids who carry around little rocks, or they carry around little acorns, little things in their pockets, it's one area of their lives that they say, oh, I can control this, these little acorns, I can move them over here, I can put them up over here, I can put them in a box, I can put them in my pocket, I can move them around. And so at some point, a preschool teacher usually comes up and takes those rocks or acorns away from the child. The child has a big tantrum because now the one thing that I felt that I could control in my life, I no longer had. The teacher just took it away. And so, very normal. I just want to give those kids lots and lots of ownership over their life. I'm not going to let them control my home, but I do give them some ownership. Got an email last night, kind of late, from a mom. There's a little boy went to the grandparents' house, and apparently he went all by himself. They put him on an airplane, and he went to spend spring break with his grandparents. Well, apparently he is like many of our kids, and does a pretty good job of manipulating and playing people. And so he had grandma giving him a toy every day that he exhibited good behavior. And he apparently would start to throw tantrums if he didn't get what he was demanding or asking for. And so when he got home, obviously the mom was embarrassed. She started laying onto him, you know, consequences and getting into all that. And my question was, and so she said, well, what am I going to do? What kind of punishment should I give for this? And my honest answer is, I think you need to punish your mom. Grandma's the one who blew this, because grandma gave in. Grandma trained him that every time he demanded something, she would just give in and give it to him. What the kids are naturally going to push us, and they're going to push buttons, they're going to press, and they're going to try to get stuff. It's our job as adults to have very clear expectations, to say no, to create that order and structure. Listen, your kids play video games all day long. The video games tell them no. They tell them what the rules of the game are. They tell them what the consequences are for losing. And your kids follow those directions because it's always consistent. Video games are always the same. And so, to be honest, there's a few things at play here. One is grandma needs to get a backbone here. I love grandparents being fun ones, and I love grandparents sometimes spoiling a child, but not every day giving him to demands. So grandma, next time we send there, grandma needs to lay down very clear expectations in that you don't get toys for good behavior, and you don't get something every day. You know what I'm going to give you? I'm going to give you my attention, and I'm going to give you experiences, and I'm going to spend time with you, and I'm going to watch you as you pursue your passions, and I'm going to participate and enjoy that with you. But I'm not giving you stuff. There are many of you, and many of us, we fall into that trap of, well, they just have such a hard day, they had a hard life, I'm just going to get them something at the store. I would say, don't do that. Our kids as a whole don't want stuff. If you give them stuff all the time, you're just training them. Well, every time we go to the grocery store, you are allowed to pick out something at the front of the store in the checkout line. Well, if you train them to do that, then every time they do that and you don't give them something, well, you've trained them to do that. So say no. Besides, it will save you a lot of money if you just establish that. And I have no problem saying no to kids. It's a great thing to say no to kids. But the thing is, these rules have to be very clear and they have to be spelled out. I'll tell you a quick story. Last month we were in Atlanta, Georgia. We did a workshop at this great little school. It's called the Eastminster School. And it's just we walked through there and they're just doing really great great job with kids who are gifted and then kids who are struggling a little bit. And so the people who run the school told us about this place in Atlanta where you could get a thing called a ghetto burger. And so they said, hey, next time you're in Atlanta, give us a shout, and we'll take you there. So we were just down there this past week, and we wanted this world-famous ghetto burger. And it's in downtown Atlanta, and you pull out, and it's this older lady, and it's called, I think it's Miss Annie's Snack Shack or something, but it's the home of the ghetto burger. Now, this burger is a full pound of ground beef. It has on it cheese, lettuce, tomato, chili, bacon, and I forget what else. Tons of anything you can imagine, it has it on there. But here's the deal with going there and why it's kind of like this neat experience. This lady will kick you out of her little place. You have to stand out in a line if you don't get there early enough. And there are only 8 seats at a counter. There are 8 people allowed in the place at any one time. If you walk into there before someone comes out, she will kick you out. You are done. You don't get to go in and eat one of these burgers. When you get in there, you will see a very clear and big list of rules up right in front of you that give you 10 clear rules. No cursing, no swearing, no this, no that. You can't do this. You say, yes, ma'am. You can't lean on the counter. You can't put your elbow on the counter. But the thing is, everybody knows what the rules are. You don't have to guess when you go in. And the only way you can get kicked out is if you just clearly disobey the rules. And you know what? The whole time, the five of us who were there, we were all the whole time, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am. And we'd help each other because sometimes you'd have your elbow. You just kind of lean up on the counter. But the beautiful thing about this was there's no guesswork in there. It's a very fair way to do it. What's not fair is that when sometimes we just change the rules around on our kids. One night it's this way, the other night it's another way. Or if mom and dad aren't on the same page, just not fair to the kids. So, mom, relax. Your child's going to be fine. Give grandma time out instead of your child. Okay, quick note here. Something we posted on Facebook. If you're not a Facebook person, I'm not a huge fan of it personally. I use it for Celebrate Calm. I love it for that. We get a lot of feedback from people. We can give people like in-the-moment tips. Sometimes like on Sunday night, we'll give a Sunday night reminder. Hey, remember, lay out the plan for the week. You know, go over your schedule, eliminate unknowns. So there's some neat things like that. We'll ask questions. Parents give some great tips on things that work for their kids. So if you're not a big Facebook person, you can just go get an account. You don't have to sign up and like follow all kinds of people and have it annoy you. You just go facebook.com/celebratecalm, and you can join us here. But this is what I wrote this morning, because we don't always spend a lot of time on marriage because so many questions are about parenting and about kids, and marriage is an afterthought, which is a shame because we need strong marriages. It's an essential part of creating this order and structure in the home and just teaching kids how to work on relationships. There's no more difficult relationship than marriage. And rather than just kind of my response was always hiding from issues, or I kind of ran away from issues and I kind of just be quiet. And everybody has different ways that they do it. So what better way to model to your kids how to get along with an annoying person than modeling it in your marriage? So because we're all annoying. So here's what I wrote. Hey, marriage is really difficult. Just ask my wife. And the pattern that I'm trying to break is this. Instead of trying to overcome my wife's objections and change her opinion, which is totally what I have always done in my life, when I encounter resistance, I break down the resistance, and I'm going to argue, and I'm going to change your opinion. So instead of doing that, I'm trying to control my own reaction instead. So I validate my wife's reservations about something. And you know what's interesting? It's amazing what happens in any relationship when we stop controlling how other people feel, react, or think, and instead control ourselves. It is a very, very simple concept. The only person in life that I can control is myself. In practice, it's really difficult because it gets to the core of all kinds of deep, deep issues that we have, issues we've had since childhood, deep anxiety, ways that we look at religious figures or authority figures. It gets into our parents and how they parented us. It gets into fears that we have, and it causes us to control other people. And that's part of the reason I'm excited beyond belief when we do the Calm Boot Camp, is because we're rooting out really deep stuff in all of us. And every new boot camp class, I actually go through that again myself every single day. And I'm still finding junk. I'm finding areas where, man, I didn't even realize I was trying to control how other people think or how they react to situations. Because someone will react, and then I react to their reaction, and I'm basically judging them for their reaction, not even letting them have that. My kids, my wife, she's entitled to feel, react, or think however she wants. It's just that instead of controlling her, I'm going to control myself. This is ultimately the most liberating thing in the world, because now I don't have to fix other people. I don't have to control other people. Man, you know what? If the church, if the Christian church would get a hold of this principle, instead of judging and trying to fix everyone else, we started just fixing ourselves and controlling ourselves. And for those of you whose faith is important, I would urge you, read the Sermon on the Mount, even if faith isn't important to you. The Sermon on the Mount is a great philosophical thing to read, but it's a great just thing to live by. And one of the great principles in there, I didn't plan to say this, but it's kind of top of mind, is Jesus says, hey, you know what? Before you go and try to get that speck out of your brother or your neighbor's eye, maybe you first work on that log that's in your own eye. And you know what I've kind of thought about that? I thought hidden in there is really the suggestion that if you go and you work on your own issues first, that you'll never, ever really get done with it because we have so many. And then I'll never really get to judging and pointing out someone else's faults because I will be so busy for the rest of my work life working on my own that I won't do that. And the other flip side of that is, hey, it gives you a lot of compassion. Once I'm working on myself, now I get to look at other people and say, hey, you know what? I know exactly what that feels like because I have that same junk inside of me, or I've been working on that myself. But I'm telling you, if we got a hold of that, and just people in general, man, instead of trying to fix everybody else, we modeled it, and we looked at other people with compassion, it would totally change society and the way that we do anything. Anyway, enough of that. Okay, here's a great question from a dad named Rob. Love it when dads are engaged and involved. He's got an 11-year-old son. And he says, you know what, I'm trying to raise this kid because, you know, this is a child who gets kind of volatile. And he says, I'm trying to raise this kid without burning the relationship to the ground. And I admire that and love that. And he said, you know what, I was raised by the belt. That's how my dad did it. And he says, sometimes I think it would just be easier to go that route. Like, I just laid into this kid. And Rob, you know that's not true. And you know that it would only make it worse. And he would fight you even harder. And it would destroy the relationship. But here is the issue. The son sometimes gets violent and even destructive. And you know, giving him a consequence in the moment, like, hey, you know what? If you slam that door one more time, I am taking away all your video games. You know, it just doesn't work in the moment because when he's upset, the child is emotionally, they're on fire. And they're not thinking rationally. They're not going to say, oh, my father, thank you for reminding me that slamming doors is disrespectful. I won't do that. Not going to happen, right? Physically stopping him can be really difficult, too, because now we're getting into, okay, this 11-year-old kid is upset. When kids are upset, I mean, he may have the strength of an 18 or a 25-year-old, so to physically stop him is a disaster at times, too, because then I may hurt my child or I may not restrain him enough. So What are we going to do? How do we handle this situation? So here's what I would do, and Rob, I know you're in the same mindset, is first thing I want to find out, what's causing this? What's happening underneath? Where is the underlying frustration? What's going on inside? What's the root of the issue? Is something happening at school? Is there a pattern? Look for patterns. Things usually aren't too random. There's usually a pattern to it. Oh, you know what I thought? Every day after my son has gym class, because he gets really anxious with gym class, I have issues with him. Every day when he comes home and we have to run around a lot, I get this anxiety response and he kind of shuts down and doesn't want to do anything. Every time, watch for patterns in your kids. And see if you can see anything, Rob, where you're like, oh, you know what, this is what's happening. I would talk to him sometime, not sit down, let's have a talk, but go outside and play catch with the football, go do something you enjoy, grab a piece of pizza, whatever it is, and talk to him and say, hey, listen, here's the deal, bud. I know you don't like this. You remember the other night when you got upset and you slammed the door and you kicked a hole in the wall? I know you don't like that. That's really good language to use with kids. because sometimes we think that they do like it. Sometimes we think, you know what, he's a bad kid. He's always been difficult. You know, this is just the way he is. That's not true. And that's not a fair statement to make about the child. It is the way that he is every time he gets frustrated or anxious, but that's not the real him. So I like to approach it with, hey, remember when that happened? You know, I know you don't like that, because no child wants to be in trouble all the time. And so I want to come alongside of him instead of it being me against you, and I'm going to figure out a way to get you to stop kicking my door. If I go that route, it never works well. But if I come alongside and say, hey, something's happening, what is it? What's going on? What are you most frustrated about? And I'm able to let the child talk and I listen. I want to find out, Dad, Mom, you know why I get really upset? I feel stupid. And you know what else? I feel scared because all the other kids are doing school this way and they're doing so well and I'm not. And I'm afraid that I'm not going to pass. And I'm really upset. Oh, that's what I want to find out, what's going on. And so think about it from this perspective. When you're really upset, how do you want other people to approach you when you're upset? Do you want your husband or wife, do you want your friend to come at you with this real hardline approach of like, hey, you know what? You've been a little crabby lately. You better shape up, all right? Or else we're not going out for date night Friday night. Well, that ain't working for me. How do you want people to come to you? How do you want your boss to approach you when you mess up? I mean, is it motivating when he comes and says, hey, you know what? You screw up one more time and you're going to be looking for another job. You're not like, hey, boss, you know what? That was really encouraging and motivating. I'm going to work really hard for you now. No, we'd be flipping them off in our brains because we're like, you know what? I'm not trying to mess up here. What I need are what? Some tools. You're paying me to do this job. I don't want to be messing up. What if our bosses just assumed that we were all the time? How would that make you feel? You'd shut down and you'd say, you know what, forget you. I'm trying. I just don't know how to do this. Think about this from a job perspective too. Let's say you go for a new job and there's some skill required, but they don't train you. And then in a couple weeks, your boss comes and says, hey, you know what, this isn't working out for me because we're paying you money to do this. You're not doing it right. And I'm tired of this. If you don't get your act together, you know what? You're going to lose your job. What would you be pleading? Hey, someone please train me, show me, give me on-the-job training, walk me through it. How do I do this? Because if you show me how to do it, oh, I can learn it, and I can do it, and I will. So here's where I go to the child and say, hey, I totally understand now where all this frustration is coming from, but here's the deal. I know that you don't like it when you kick the door and you get upset and you yell things because nothing good happens then. It's not good for you. It's not good for me. It's not good for anybody. So what do you want to do differently next time you're upset? What's your new routine? What do you want to do? Here's another good question. What do you want me to do next time you get upset? So, Rob, find out, is there something you and your son like to do? Is it throwing around a football? Because a great visual would be, when you see him starting to go down that path, keep football around. You go grab a football and just hold it up and just smile at him or just kind of say, hey, you want to go outside? And give him a new routine. Give him a new outlet because you can go outside and you can throw him passes. If you like doing woodworking together, if you like working with your hands, find something that he likes going out in the garage and working with you on that. If it's a little kid and he likes jumping on the mini trampoline, well, just start kind of bouncing on your toes and say, hey, you want to do mini trampoline? And come up with a new routine. Because all of this is every time he gets upset and yells and kicks the door, it's a tradition. It's a pattern of behavior that he has. So come up with something new. And then I would praise. And my praise is for progress. It's not for never having a tantrum again or a meltdown again. It's, hey, you know what? You started in on me and you started yelling at me, but you know what was cool? You caught yourself. You told me the code word, which is football. We went out and played catch, and I'm proud of you because instead of kicking the door, you stopped yourself, and we came out, and now we're going to work on the problem. So kind of work through that process. Give him something physical to do. He's getting physically violent, so give him something physical to do. It could be that you guys start doing a thing where you start working out a little bit together. 11-year-old boys start to like girls. He's going to want to have muscles. So every time he gets upset, why don't you guys hit the deck and start doing 10, 15, 20 push-ups, do some sit-ups together, do something physical together, and say, you know what we're going to do? Instead of allowing this anger to control me, instead of me giving power over my life, power over my freedom, because I lose my freedom every time I get upset, instead of giving my power to that frustration, you know what I'm doing? I'm going to turn it around. And when I get frustrated instead, I'm going to do 20 push-ups. And if I'm really frustrated, I'm going to do 25, and I'm going to do 30. And I'm going to build up my muscles. I'm going to get strong. And I'm going to feel good about myself after I get frustrated instead of just feeling stupid and like a failure. Dad, try doing something physical with him and see if you can make it a new routine that you work on. Casey and I have done that to some degree with things like push-ups and such, and it's kind of a really neat thing. Okay, here's a question from Mom. Writes and says, hey, I've seen you 3 times at the workshops. They're phenomenal, just great things, but my son, I'm struggling with him at homework time. He won't sit and listen, he won't sit and just do his homework. What do I do? Here's my answer for you. It will sound kind of harsh, but it's the truth. You've been out 3 times to the workshops, okay? I can cover a fair amount in an hour or two in a workshop, but we've been over again and again. You can't sit your kids down and do homework if that's not the way their brain is wired. They need the stimulation. And I don't have time right now. I have time to go through all the different things that you can do at homework time. One of the things that is most frustrating to me, I would just tell you this kind of a personal thing, but we were just on the road for 24, 25 days. We spoke to about 7,000 parents, teachers, and kids. The workshops keep getting better and better just because I get more practice every time I go, and we really weed out the little stuff that maybe people don't respond to, and we've got it down, and the response has been phenomenal. And here's what saddens me. I see people nodding for 2 hours straight. I see people taking notes. I see people crying at times. I see people coming up at the break and saying, you just described my family. You described me, my kids. It's like you have a camera in our home. We know this is going to help. And I hear this, and at the end of the night, I see people walk away, and they don't have any additional help, right? And that's why we came up with the audio CDs. It's why we developed that, is because I can give you an hour or two, but you need ongoing help. You need someone to walk next to you and beside you and to whisper in your ear and to speak into your brain again and again and again and again. Hey, do it this way. Hey, hear this situation. Do it this way. Hey, homework time. Here, I'll give you 20, 25, 30 minutes and dozens of ideas on homework time. But I see people walk away and they don't have any tools. And the worst part is this. I get so many follow-up emails of like, that was so great, but you know what? It was 2 weeks ago and now we're back into the same patterns. What do I do? And the truth is, you have to take some action. You have to draw a line in the sand and you have to say, I'm going to take some steps here, and I'm going to invest the time in this, and I'm going to change myself and my own reactions, and I'm going to give my kids tools to understand themselves. And I have to draw a line in the sand somewhere and say, you know what, I'm tired of this. Finally, I'm tired of this because for the last 2 years, 3 years, for the past 14 years, I fought with my kids. I fought over homework. I fought over every single power struggle there is. I fought with my spouse. I've done it this way, and yet for some reason people won't take that extra step, and I can't make people do it. And I'll tell you, today we're having kind of an internal discussion within Celebrate Calm about a couple things, because I'm doing something really cool this week that this brings me so much energy, and it's what I kind of live for. I'll tell you about that in a second. But we talk all the time about being good stewards, being good stewards of our time, of giving people time. And when we go out to do the workshops, I'll stay for an extra 30, 40 minutes. I'll stay an extra hour, sometimes an extra hour and a half. I give it everything I have. You know, we do the radio show, we do the newsletter, do the Facebook. I try to give as much time as I can to people. Try to be a good steward of our talent and our treasure and our insight and wisdom. And try to be a good steward of treasure, of giving back and giving into the community and doing all that. And we're big into mercy. And so there's always this internal kind of discussion we have, like, hey, why don't we, economy's kind of tough. Why don't we just lower the prices on this? Because, you know, giving CDs and you know, $395 or $495 or whatever price it is, that's a lot of money for people. And you know what? I really do put a lot of time into this. And I think about it. And I was upstairs and I was kind of talking a little bit and going through this and thinking, you know what? I want to have mercy on people. But here's the truth. I get more positive feedback and we see more transformation in people the more that they invest their time, their energy, and to be honest, when we first started this, sometimes the prices weren't quite as high. As we began raising the prices, I noticed more transformation. And we did a survey. Here's what we found. When people had to invest and they had to make a very conscious decision, I'm drawing a line in the sand. You know what happened? We found they were listening more. And they weren't just listening one time to the CDs. They were keeping them running, downloading them to their iPods, listening while they worked out, putting them in the minivan, keeping one in the kitchen while they're fixing dinner. And we noticed there was a direct correlation. I don't need the money. It's not that. It sounds funny, but I don't. We get enough money from fees when we travel. We're very frugal, and we manage this really wisely so we can give out and everything. So mercy to me is transformation. I don't have to sell a lot. People were always like, well, you just lowered your price, you would sell more. That's not my goal. My goal is I want to see families changed and transformed. And the reason that I went from a type A, very driven, hyper person to being able to be in control of my emotions and calm and teach this stuff is because I listened to it again and again and again and again and again. And this month I taught this. I think we did 28 workshops. That gets deep down inside of you when you're listening all the time. So here's what we decided on, and it's partly I decided because part of the beauty of starting your own organization is you get to make the decisions and kind of do what you want. And so I'm taking prices up, and they're going up in April. And I have absolutely no problem with that. I know that we will see a little bit of a shift in how many people order, and that's okay, because I know that the people who do order, if it's important to you, you will make it happen. And I'll just tell you something that just happened right before we went on air is mom just ordered the CDs. Here's what she said. We're in the middle of so many home repairs right now. We're doing college catch-up savings for our oldest son. I think they've got four kids. And so she said, the most I get your husband do is X, you know, they're going to do two payments. And they did a reduced amount because it was important to them, and they called and they emailed and said, this is what we can do. And she said, if that's something you all would consider, I would definitely love to have this information. We have four kids, and I can already see some of the strategies Kirk mentioned at the workshop helping me see exchanges, interactions with my kids in a different light. And I know if a one-hour lecture can bring about that much change, there's golden information on those CDs because she's getting 15 hours worth of CDs. And you know what? I would tell you this. We work within everybody's budget. I don't think we've ever turned down anyone who was assertive enough to email or to call the 88 number and say, Brett, here's my budget. Here are the payments that we can do. Are you good with that? And I guarantee he's going to say, absolutely. I'll create a link for you. You can send a check in and we work with you. But I have no problem with charging a lot of money for it because it's worth it. And whatever is important to us, it's where we put our money. We go on vacations that cost thousands of dollars. We get testing that costs $1,200, $1,500. We go to therapists that cost $100, $125, $150. And I know insurance covers some of it. But we spend that money each week, every 2 weeks, and we just don't get the insight and strategies that work. So I would tell you, be bold. And here's another thing that I feel passionate about is this. It's the last week of March. I have committed this week to doing this. Every single penny that comes in, we are going to donate to charity. Much to the consternation of some people around me, I've also committed to this. I'm not only asking you to make the commitment, draw a line in the sand, but I am going to match every single dollar that comes in. I am going to match that and give to charity. So if you get the CDs this week, and I don't care what you get them for, or if you just order them, if you call, if you order them right off the newsletter this week, not only are we going to take every single penny of that, not proceeds. I don't like that whole giving proceeds thing, because you never know what people are taking out of that. Every single penny, I eat the processing fees, the cost of the product, all of that, and I'm going to match it. And here are a couple of the programs that we've dedicated this to. One is, I don't know if any of you know Danny Gokey, who's an American Idol contestant. To be quite honest, I didn't even know who he was, because I didn't watch Idol for quite a few years. And so, but he has a program called Sophia's Heart, named after his wife who had passed away. And their mission is to help children. Children who are suffering from poverty, from severe illnesses, kids with broken homes, broken dreams. It is to show mercy on those kids and give them a home, give them a place where they can be, where the families can be restored. And we're going to be, we're actually going down there Wednesday to see how we can get actually physically involved with that restoration process. So I know that money is going to a good place. We work very, very closely with the Salvation Army in feeding the homeless, again, in restoration of families, in giving them practical tools to get jobs, to learn, to get their education. Sometimes when we're home, we do volunteer tutoring after school for kids. Very, very, very practical school needs, meets their spiritual needs, and then also for our troops. There are a number of different organizations that we support. Wounded Warrior Project is one that we support for the families of servicemen and women who are wounded. Anyway, if you want more information, I'll probably post the different charities on our Facebook page. But we're super excited. I have a whole week to do this. And that's kind of what brings us a lot of meaning, is to be able to have like a big impact through this. So, Mom, if you want tips on homework time, and we will help you totally transform your homework time, then you need to step out and be bold and email or call us, and we can get those CDs to you. But I'm not just giving you an answer right now. So anyway, here's another question. This is from Angela. A 7-year-old son was diagnosed with ADHD. The psychologist said, hey, you know what, this is a stimulation issue, which is great, because that's what we're all about, right? This is very much a stimulation issue. And but the psychologist kind of went right away to, you know what, I think he should be on medication. And Mom was reluctant and said, hey, when is medication essential for kids? And so my question was, what are the problems that the child is having? Because maybe, just maybe, we can address these different issues without using the medication, because there are some kids who absolutely need medication, just like there are some kids who need glasses. They have to have those. But if I can teach a child, train a child, if the teacher can stimulate the brain and do some other things that are very proactive and positive without any side effects, well, then I'd rather go that route. So, you know, general behavior issues, fine. I get that all the time. Well, exercise before school is critical for kids. It works out some of those sensory issues. It gets some of the anxiety out, and it gets their brain stimulated. Well, one of the other problems this child is having, well, he appears to find it because he doesn't always follow the rules or listen to directions in class. That's definitely, usually it's a brain stimulation issue, sometimes a motivation issue, and then sometimes it's an auditory processing issue as well. It has nothing really to do with the medication, it's just how his brain works. So I'd say give that 7-year-old some ownership in class, give him some specific responsibilities. So when there are directions, when there are things he needs to do, get him physically involved in doing that. Have him get involved, get up and move around and help out with a specific project. So we get them moving, get them involved with that. Use visuals with your kids when you give them directions. Don't use so many words. It's just blah, 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 blah. Okay, paint pictures in their brains of what they need to do. If they need to go to the back of the room and grab a couple things, well, paint that picture in his brain. Instead of so many words, create a visual of him in a funny way going back and grabbing the grabbing a certain book, or if he needs to, say he needs to clean the desks in the classroom, which is often a great thing to get sensory kids to do, then I may say, instead of giving them long directions, I may say, hey, here you go, Jacob, picture these three things in your brain. A spray bottle, three paper towels, front row of desks. Okay, picture that in your brain. Picture it. Sometimes use colors, like your favorite child's favorite color. In this case, it may be blue. Picture the spray bottle being red, because little boys will be like, oh, like it's filled with blood. Okay, they can remember that. Three red paper towels and the desks are all red. It's just something happens when kids create images in their brains of things. I've told this before, but Casey loves exotic sports cars. So if I want him to remember to go grab two or three things from his bedroom, I'll just say, hey, remember, picture the Ferrari that you want one day, and in that little tiny trunk, you're going to have to fit these three things. It gives them some context for remembering those things. So we can do some things in the classroom. We can ask questions instead of just making statements to help out with following rules. Kids, he's sometimes aggressive. He kicks things and hits things, not people, but he hits things. And so right now what's happening is they're writing him up and he's getting sent to the office. Well, sometimes kids who are aggressive, sometimes it's a sensory issue, and that's why doing some sensory things in class is so important. Getting those sensory needs met before school, really, really important. Getting physical pressure for the child, climbing, jumping on a trampoline, rolling around on the ground is great for kids. And instead of spending our time, and let's kind of transition this here, a kid gets upset or frustrated. It's kind of like Rob. You remember we talked about the dad with an 11-year-old son. So this child gets upset, frustrated, maybe overwhelmed in class. So he kicks his chair. And so now he gets written up. He gets in school suspension maybe and gets sent to the office. Well, that's not going to change anything because that's just an outward behavior we're responding to. And we're treating it like it's a rational thing with the child when it's not. That's not rational. They got upset, and so I'm upset, and I kick a chair. Well, that's not rational. That's irrational. And so now I try to address it in a rational way and sit the child down and say, listen, Jacob, if I have to tell you again that if you kick the chair next time, I'm going to write you up. You're going to get suspended. You go to the principal's office. It doesn't matter. What the child needs is for me to spend time teaching him, next time you get frustrated because another kid in class was calling you a name or was just making annoying a noise, so what are you going to do differently next time? Because kicking the chair is not a good option, and you don't want to do that. So what could you do? That's where I want to spend my time. So, Angela, back to your question. Here's the approach I prefer to take when it comes to medication. I want to give a child who is struggling tools, as many tools as possible to succeed. And so my first tool is, let's teach him how his brain works, because this is the brain that he's been given. I believe it's been given on purpose, because we need kids who have brains like this, because they're the great inventors. They're the kids who push through, who develop all the new great ideas. They're problem solvers. So I like that. But he has to know the rest of his life, he is going to need to stimulate his brain. If he doesn't know that, he will oftentimes, as a teenager, as a young adult, and some of you know this because you're like this, or you have a husband perhaps who is like this, he will pursue risky behavior, not because he's a bad person or because he means to be self-destructive, but because he doesn't understand it's totally about stimulating his brain. When I was in my earlier years, I did a lot of this stuff. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know I was sabotaging my own success by doing that. All I knew was I was just driven by this need. And now that I know that I have a need for stimulation, to be honest, this whole idea of like, okay, we're going to spend a week and give everything away to charity, that's really stimulating to me. And so I get my stimulation in positive ways, and that drives me rather than having to find negative ways. So I want to teach him. And this is the beauty of, I don't want to keep harping on this, but giving this child the CDs to listen to, putting them on the background so he knows, yes, that's my brain. And then being able to say, hey, remember where, Kirk said on the CD, remember he said you have to be responsible for your own behavior. You need to be responsible for your homework time. You need to be responsible. What are you going to do in the classroom now to get that stimulation instead of picking on your classmates or playing with stuff or getting up and walking around or kicking and hitting things? What are you going to do differently? Give him tools. Give him physical tools. I would watch diet. Watch the exercise. Teaching him in the home, how do we calm down? Does dad know how to calm down when he's driving on the freeway? Does mom, do you know how to calm down when things aren't going your way? Are you practicing this as a family? So all these different tools, different ways to get to stay focused with attention in class. I want to give him all these different tools. And then if at the end of that, if I try that, say, for a month or 2 months, and the teacher is working with you in 3 months, and he's still having a specific issue, then I may go back to the psychologist and say, hey, listen, here are the 10 issues that he was having in school. We've been doing, giving him these tools, X, Y, and Z tools, and they're working really well in just about everything. But he's still struggling in this area. Then maybe I go back and say, would this particular medication help with this particular very specific issue? Because I'm not a big fan of just saying, well, he has ADHD, so he needs his brain to be stimulated, so I'm going to give him this drug because that will stimulate his brain. No, I want it to be much more specific, and I want to give him the other tools first. So, Angel, hope that helps. Email me if there's something kind of beyond that you need. Okay, great question. Why don't my kids listen until I yell? They don't do anything, and then I yell, and then they spring into action. Honest answer is, it's because you probably conditioned them to act that way. Because here's the pattern. You talk, and you ask nicely, and don't move, and then you start to ask a little bit more. Your voice rises a little bit. Then you start to plead. Then we sometimes start to threaten, right? Guys, if you don't do this, I'm going to take away your stuff. They're still not doing anything. And then we finally lose it. And what the kids know is, well, they don't have to listen the first 14 times they tell you that, because all they know is they're just going to wait until you blow their top, and then they spring into action, because that's the pattern that we have created by just doing that again and again. And we have to establish a standard of, I will tell you one time. Or little kids, I may tell them twice, I may give them a reminder, I may use the visuals, I may write it down, I may make it very clear, expectations, I love doing that, you know, work with your kids a little bit. But I'm going to tell you, and then I'm not going to tell you again. And here is the consequence of what happens if you don't listen the first time, if the chore does not get done. Here is the consequence. It's not up to me to remind you. It's not up to me to follow you around, because your boss is not going to do that. Your spouse is not going to do that. Real life does not work like that. But I have to have the emotional strength to just do it and to follow through on the consequence and just to say, I told you I was going to tell you once. I was going to tell you twice, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to yell at you anymore. And you know what else I would do as well? I would go and I would apologize to the kids, not in a groveling kind of way, but I would say, you know what, guys? I need to apologize to you. You know why? Because I've made you dependent on me. I've been being responsible for your behavior because I ask you 14 times, and then I plead with you, and I beg you, then I yell at you. And you know what? That was wrong of me to do because I'm handicapping you. You guys are smart. You know how to do things. When you are motivated to do something on your video games, you have no problem springing into action and listening. When you are watching your favorite TV program, you hear everything they say. When you are listening to your music, you hear everything. You know all the words. In fact, you can recite all of the words, all of the dialogue to your favorite movie. You can do all the different characters in their voice. So I know you can hear. But that, you know what, that was my issue. I apologize for doing that. Here are the rules going forward. I will tell you one time. I may whisper it sometimes because sometimes you listen more when I whisper. I may write it down. I'm telling you one time. It is up to you to do it. I'm not going to follow up with you on it. If it doesn't get done, there will be a natural consequence for it. When I give you the consequence, I expect you to yell and scream and tell me that it's not fair. You're going to tell me I'm the worst mom in the world. Fine. You can put it on a coffee mug. Give it to me for Mother's Day, okay, because I'm not responsible for your happiness. I'm not responsible for doing your chores and what I ask you. You are. And so I'm going to do my chores and my stuff because I'm a busy person. And so I'm going to lay back off of that, right? And I'm going to set the expectations. It's going to take a little while. But that's part of being consistent, of listening to this stuff again and again and again and again, is it gives you emotional strength to know, okay. And this, you know, parenting is hard. If whoever told you it's going to be all sweet and easy and fun, you know, don't listen to that person. It's hard. It takes a lot of emotional strength to say no to a child because you know the tantrum's coming and you know they're going to call you names and you still have to follow through because you want them to know that you're the adult and they can count on you. And the other part of this is this. I'm not giving a lot of emotional energy or that stimulation. They're not going to get, my kids aren't going to get my stimulation by me yelling at them. Because that's the trap we fall into is they need the brain stimulation, and the quickest way to get it is for them to roll their eyes, say no, not do something, and now we're like, how many times do I have to tell you? Why do I always have to tell you to do this? You know what? If you guys don't do this right now and see all that energy we give to them, instead of it giving there, where I want to give my energy is when they do things right. You know what I love about you, Jason? I love the fact that you are independent because nobody told you to do that on your video games, and yet you went the extra mile so you could get to the next level. You've got persistence. I have seen it when you're playing your video games. I have seen it when you're engaged and when you're into something. Maybe we can put some of that persistence and that creative energy into doing your chores and into your homework. But I want to start giving my energy to the positives so that my kids seek it from there. When we made this transition from Casey, that was one of the biggest, quickest changes was when my energy went from being on him all the time, Casey, cut it out. Casey, why can't you just do it this way? Casey, well, you hear that in the voice? When you hear someone else doing that to your kids, you cringe, don't you? Because you hear that and you're like, that is so ugly. If someone talked to me like that all the time, I wouldn't do anything they say. And that's why at the workshops and sometimes I do that so you can kind of hear it. And even this, when you hear me doing that, you're like, crap, that's what I sound like. And so when my energy started going to Casey, you know what? You know what I really like? I love the fact that you ask why. I love it that you're looking for new ways to do things. Because you know who does that? Problem solvers. You know who get all the good jobs now? Problem solvers. One day, someone's going to pay you a lot of money to solve problems because you're going to say, why? Could it be done a different way? Could it be done a better way? I like that quality. You know when you really want something, Casey, and you're just asking, 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 and you're really persistent at it? I love that quality. Now, I want you to know, when you bug, whine, complain me to get something and I say no, I'm only saying it one time. You're not getting it. So, you can try that persistence on me in that regard, not going to work. But if you want to put that persistence into pursuing one of your goals and your visions and your dreams in life, put it there because that's a great quality. And you know what? All those other kids who are sometimes are more well-behaved than you and sometimes, you know, excuse me, you may feel a little bit resentful or like, wow, why couldn't I be just like them because it's easier for them? You know, one day you're going to surpass them because they're going to give up. You never give up. And I love that. Start putting your energy into doing that. It's really pretty cool. Okay, Debbie writes, has a daughter who's 10, struggles with social skills, which many of our kids do. Many of our kids, great with adults, great with older kids, sometimes magnets for younger kids, great with animals. Kids their own age, really struggle. Sometimes they act immature to try to get attention. They're just not sure how to connect with kids their own age, because in some ways they're more mature than the other kids. They're old souls. They want to talk about deeper things, bigger issues. But with their own peers, it's like they're just odd sometimes. And so this mom is hearing kids, you know, other girls kind of talk behind her daughter's back, and she says, oh, I don't want her to have to suffer through this and go through all this. So a few quick things with social skills. Ask the teacher to pair up your daughter with another child who shares a similar interest or passion. Have them work on a project together. It's a great way to build social skills. Get your daughter using her gifts, talents, and passions, things that she's good at doing. Have the teacher get her doing those things in class. She will draw to her other kids who share those passions. Other kids will get to see, yeah, she's a little bit odd sometimes, but man, she is really creative. We didn't know she could sing like that. We didn't know she could play a musical instrument. We didn't know that she could create stuff out of clay like that. We didn't know whatever it is. Play dates, even at 10, ask the teacher, ask someone at church, say, hey, is there another girl who's kind of like my daughter a little bit? And then set up a time for that girl to come over to your house, kind of arrange the play date. Don't have them necessarily run off and play by themselves, because usually our kids will just boss the other kids around until they don't want to play anymore. But draw them in and do something together, you know, a project together. Hey, girls, you know, would you help me out? There's a nice old couple down the road. I thought I'd make a meal for them. I'd make a dessert for them. Will you guys help me bake some cookies together? And while you're in there, it's great for sensory needs. You're making the cookies. You're doing a project together. Model for your daughter how to carry on a conversation. It's a skill, just like adding and subtracting is. And some of our kids, they just have a deficit in that department with kids their own age, and they don't realize what they're doing. So I would model it for them, and then also script it for them. Talk to your daughter sometime while you're doing something like baking and say, hey, you know what? I've noticed sometimes, like, you're just really bright, and you get along great with adults, and it's just, you know, you have great conversations, you know, because Alice's mom told her, I mean, the other day you were at her house, and you guys just had this great conversation. That's just a great skill, honey. But sometimes I've noticed, you know, is it hard sometimes connecting to other kids in your class? Do you just feel like you're, you know, maybe brighter than them, or maybe you just, you know, just feel a little bit different? She may say, yeah, kind of. Well, you want some help? Because sometimes I've felt like that before. And so teach them script. Give them a script, kind of like, hey, when you're in this situation, here's a good question to ask. Teaching kids to ask questions is a really great tool for building social skills. When Casey first learned this, he would start asking questions when he got uncomfortable, because otherwise he would just dominate conversation or talk about whatever he thought was interesting, or he'd do kind of silly, stupid stuff to get attention. But when he learned, well, if I ask questions of someone else, it kind of takes the pressure off of me to talk about something, and then it gets them talking, and I find out things we have in common, and it's easier to talk. Bingo. That's a great way to do it. So, you know what, Debbie, just try that. Try some of those things and just relax with it. She'll learn as she gets older. It becomes easier and easier as we get a little bit older. Okay, let us move on. Here's one. It's a good one. Hubby, who just likes ordering kids around. He gives the kids timeouts for everything. He's basically, that's all that I did with Casey for a long time. That's all I knew to do. It's kind of what my dad did, and you know, obviously not the best way for this to work. But he was at dinner time. He's like making deals with the kids, like, if you eat another bite, I'll give you this, or this won't happen. And that just makes for kids hating dinner time. And I'll just say this, and I have to say it bluntly, that was me. I just liked ordering Casey around, ordering everybody around, and my whole mindset was, well, I'm the father, I'm the adult, kids just need to get with the program and do what I say, because that's what I learned. And I will tell you, my view on that now is that it's so lazy, Just giving timeouts for everything. Well, it's just lazy. Well, I'll just send them up. And I get it because we're tired and we're frustrated. But it doesn't teach the kids anything. And, you know, it's interesting. If you do a little study, and I know I'm a geek. I'm a word geek. But the word discipline, we get disciple from that. And the Latin, the root Latin, a root word from that, the Latin word is pupil, means to teach. And so our focus needs to be, rather than on discipline, we tend to be, well, discipline means you give your kids consequences and you punish them. No, it doesn't. It means you teach them so that they don't keep doing it again. Do you know, if you look at it in this way, much of the discipline that we do actually punishes us because we don't take the time to teach them different ways to respond. So they just keep doing it again and again, and it torments us. And so sometimes you're going to get a timeout if you don't stop that. That's lazy. That's not teaching the kids anything. And sometimes it's a control issue. Dad controls the kids because he can't control himself. Guys, if you don't cut it out right now, I'm going to lose it. Right? That's what my language was. So I begin to control my kids because I can't control myself. Now, sometimes with the moms, it's the resentment card, right? After all I do for you, and you can't even set the table, right? That's the same thing. It's a, you better set the table, or I'm going crazy, Mom, on you. It's a matter of controlling others because I don't have any self-control, or I can't control myself because I'm so frustrated. And I would tell hubbies who do this, you have to grow up and change yourself. And I know that's hard because I resisted this for years and years. There were a couple years there where every day in my brain, I felt this little voice saying, hey, what if instead of trying to change Casey's behavior, you control and change your own? And I just resisted because I was hard-headed and say, no, not my job. He's the kid. I'm the parent. That's the way that it is. Until I finally realized I was a really immature 35-year-old guy. And I would say in most of these cases, your husband's just immature. And he just needs to grow up. And instead of changing the kids, he needs to change himself. If you want to see your kids change yourself, control your own behavior first. I will tell you, it is magic. Out in the real world, when our kids see us controlling ourselves, when they see us handling situations with other adults, with peers, with people at church, at synagogue, with the person at the grocery store, with the waiter who didn't bring us the right order, with traffic, with everyday situations, when they see us handling those things with some patience and some grace and putting other people before us, that's what changes your kids. Our lectures don't mean anything. They just don't. They're born of anxiety. So it could be that your husband has some anxiety issues too. So I like to teach men, use analogies. The quarterback that we want in the game, or, you know, take the NCAA tournament. Who's going to win the basketball tournament? You know who it's going to be decided by? These games come down to the last second, and it's the kids who stay calm and cool under pressure, who don't panic, and who don't try to control the other team. They control themselves, and they hit that shot. They execute that play at the last minute. That's who wins the games. That's who wins in life. That's the general on the battlefield that we respect. The one who's not cowering, the one who's like walking, sitting and walking straight forward while the enemy is firing at him and he's not frazzled by it. But the best leaders in life aren't the bossy ones. That's not leadership. The best leaders are servant leaders. They're the ones who serve. And at some point I'm going to expand on this with us as parents because we get it in our heads of like, well, they're kids. They just need to do what I tell them. And I get that, and I want kids to do that, and I want Casey to do what I ask him to do. But I'll tell you, the biggest changes, again, come not from controlling him but by controlling myself. When I got in my head that my job as a father and as a husband was to serve my family instead of the other way around, because I'll tell you, there are a lot of men here that we work with and in churches who are thinking, well, wife is supposed to be this way with her husband. Yeah, but apparently you forgot to read the part before that where it says that the husband is supposed to lay his life down and serve his family. And we get it in our heads because, well, I go off to work and I struggle and I earn living for my family. Again, from personal experience, that was the easy part for me. I can earn a living for my family pretty easily, and I can work hard. Physical work, intellectual work, not hard for me at all. You know what's hard? Emotional work. How do I deal with my children when they're acting up, when they don't react the way I want them to? How do I respond to my wife when my wife doesn't respond the way I want to? That's hard. And when I start serving and leading by example, guess what happens? Everyone around me starts to lead by example. So here's where I'll leave it with the hubby and who's not listening. Give your husbands a challenge and say, listen, we've been doing it your way for the last 7 years, for the last 17 years that we've had kids. Doesn't appear that it's working that well. And so if this were your job and you had a boss, you would have been fired a long time ago. Now, you don't have to say it like that. But you can say, hey, we've been trying this way for a long time. It's not working. I don't know if you noticed. It's not working. So for one weekend, for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, let's try it a different way. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to help you with this. But let's do it a different way. And if at the end of the weekend you see that the kids are responding to us, that they're doing it what we ask them, if you're finding that you're enjoying it and the relationship is better, then maybe we can just keep doing that again and again and again. Okay, let me move on from that. Great email from a mom who said, attended your seminar in Long Island. It was awesomely amazing. I could have sat and listened to you for hours. You know exactly what my kids are like. You did touch on many overly familiar scenarios. There's two questions I do have. One, ending the video game struggle. I don't think I got to it that night. And to be honest, I'm not going to get to it right now. How in the world do I get my kids off the video computer games without hearing, come on, Mom, just one more match. I'm in a battle. All those things. I can't go through that right now. But what I can tell you is when you start putting things in their court and when you start being consistent with this, and you just do it again and again and again and again, and not getting drawn into these battles, they will end. I would tell you we go over this specifically on the parenting CDs. So if you really want to know how, then I need you to make the investment and say, I want it. Otherwise, you keep having the frustrating battles. Okay, second one is the one that I wanted to address for you. It's this. I have a four-year-old diva who is going on 14, and I need her to understand that we are not leaving the house with her wearing her leopard print leggings with a striped shirt. So four-year-old girl, how can I get her to understand that we are not leaving the house with leopard print leggings and a striped shirt? I didn't expect to have this problem until she actually hit the age of 14, not to mention her strange obsession with short sleeves. She even pushes the sleeves up on her winter coat. What the heck? So, okay, Mom, you are going to regret that you asked these questions for the time being here, but I would tell you is this. This is totally your issue. This has nothing to do with your four-year-old diva. What's interesting is, and I say this with all compassion, and I love the fact that you asked these questions and came out, and I love your attitude and all of this, is you're talking about your four-year-old diva who needs things to be just so, but my guess is she got that from someone, and she probably got that from you. Because, look, you're getting upset, like, what the heck? Like, why does she have to roll her sleeves up on her winter coat? She has a session with short sleeves. Who cares if she does? How does that affect you? I know that may be a little bit embarrassing to you, her wearing leopard print leggings with a striped shirt. Who cares? She's four. This is completely 100% your issue. And I am not going to tell you how to get your four-year-old to leave the house without wearing that. That's not her issue. There's nothing morally wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. She likes those clothes. Who cares? It's your issue because you probably are very put together, Mom. You look really nice. Everything matches. The earrings match. The shoes match. When the weather gets nice, and if I see you, I think we may come back to Long Island in May if I see you out there again. I'm going to look, and you're going to have the open-toed sandals, and your toes are going to be manicured and all painted and all nice, and you look beautiful and great. And you're the kind of mom who always has a child like this who's a mess and who doesn't look all put together. And I think there's kind of a reason for that, because it's to challenge you. You have to let go. Think about this, mom. And this I will just tell you, this is your issue, and this is why we developed the Calm Boot Camp. And I'm kind of having fun with you, but I will tell you in all seriousness, if you can't handle a four-year-old wearing some stuff that doesn't match and prints with stripes, you're in for a long haul. And I can tell you what your future is like. Endless power struggles over meaningless issues. When your daughter is 14 and she starts to have issues with boys and issues with self-confidence in herself, you know what's going to happen? She's not coming to you. You know why? Because you will have pounded her and been on her about meaningless issues that were not her issue, that were your issue, for the first 14 years of her life. And what she will have learned is, my mom overreacts to everything. How can I tell her I'm having this problem with a boy? How can I tell her I'm having this other emotional issue? Because she's just going to overreact. You have to get control of this while she is four, before we get into real issues. If you're interested in the boot camp, tell us. It is so deep, it is so good, and it is so much about us dealing with our own issues so that I can have freedom in life. I control myself, and I'm not letting other people control me, and I'm not hurting my relationships with a four-year-old little girl. Do you know what we're robbing this four-year-old little girl of? Picture your morning. She comes down in this. She's happy. She's comfortable. She thinks she looks great. And now the mother who loves her, and I know you love your little girl, you look at her and you give her this negative look, and I can't believe you were wearing that. Young lady, you can march yourself right up the stairs and you put something else on, and we get in this meaningless fight. And we send our daughter off to preschool or off to school with her all this frustration, this power struggle, instead of being able to look at her and say, I love you, and you know what? You look beautiful. Now, I know inside you don't think she looks beautiful, but she does look beautiful. That's what she wants to wear. Why can't she wear that? I want people to think differently and look differently. If everybody just looked all perfectly, all matched up, there'd be nothing interesting in life. There'd be no interesting music. You know what, Mom? If everybody did things the way you did, you'd be so irritated because there'd be no interesting movies and no interesting photography and no interesting books of people looking at things a different way. The other thing we're missing here is she probably has some sensory issues. That strange obsession with short sleeves, and she pushes the sleeves up. She doesn't like the way it feels on her forearms, and that's real to her. And you can say, well, that's stupid. No, it's not to her. It's very real. I have on right now the most comfortable clothes. Some of you have heard me before. I've got on that blue hoodie sweatshirt with a little Nike swoosh. This shirt has to be at least 10 years old, and the sleeves are ripped up. And I will do anything. I told you before, I lost this at a Dave Matthews concert in Charlottesville, Virginia this past summer. And I called the Coliseum, and they found it. I paid more for shipping to get this beautiful, lovely shirt back than I did for anything else. But, see, I can wear this because nobody can see me. When I go do workshops, I put on a nice, crisp white shirt and a very nice tie, and I try to look all nice, a nice black jacket. But don't fight over this. So, Mom, if you're listening to this, call us. I will do a package deal for you because you need help. I will get you the CDs so that you can learn about this. So sensory issues, so you can learn about getting kids off video games. And I'll also get you registered for the Calm Boot Camp, because unless you get control of this, you're going to drive everybody around you absolutely crazy. And the worst part of it is you're missing out on this really lovely little four-year-old who is a diva, and I bet she's just an interesting, really little girl, and she's got a great future ahead of her. Okay, let me keep going here. Number, I've got everything numbered here, so I can kind of keep in order. Number 15 here, Tina, okay, real quickly, she's listening to Brain Booster CDs, feels like you've been in my, watching my son in school and at home. Nutrition is what she wanted to know about, because we mentioned some nutrition things. I can't run through it all, but let me run through a few things for you nutrition-wise. Definitely more protein. Kids need more protein. I know it's a struggle because many of your kids' only protein is chicken nuggets, right, or cheese at times. Peanut butter, just get good peanut butter. You know what, I had a mom at a workshop say, all my son wants to eat is peanut butter sandwiches. That's all he'll eat. You know, when kids are young, I'm okay with that. Just make sure it's the good peanut butter, not Jif. Jif is nothing but sugar. Get them some all-natural peanut butter. There's cashew butter that you can get that I use occasionally for things, some with some good protein and some good fat in it. As much protein, if your kids will eat some chicken nuggets in the morning before school, who says they can't have chicken nuggets in the morning? Sometimes that would make morning more fun. Casey does smoothies and does, he has a, just did a little bit ago after his workout, he made a smoothie with some protein powder and he put some fruit in it, and that kind of helps out. Definitely eliminate the sugar. High fructose corn syrup is just a nasty, nasty chemical. Get rid of it. I know some of us, I used to be a Coca-Cola addict. I loved it, loved it, loved it. And we just finally got rid of that and got rid of fruit juices. All the kids who came to summer camp, we eventually, after a while, we just said, you know what, your kids are coming to camp. They're not getting anything but water. We're just going to give them water. And you know what, when they get thirsty enough, they'll drink water. So just go to water. You will be amazed at how much money it saves you when you go out to dinner and eat with your kids and you aren't getting sodas anymore. And you feel better and you're more calm because you don't have all this caffeine in your system. Just go to water. Try to get rid of the preservatives as much as possible. Some people will do an elimination diet where they look at things like some kids do better on a gluten-free diet. Some kids do better on getting rid of certain things. You get rid of wheat. You get rid of dairy. Around this time of year when you get into allergy season, which hits me, I start to eliminate sugar and I eliminate dairy because dairy causes inflammation, so does sugar. Wheat, I believe, will cause that as well. So you just have to kind of watch on that. I'll try to address that in some greater detail on a future radio broadcast. But do what you know makes common sense. More veggies if you can. Model it for your kids. Casey didn't eat veggies when he was little. You know what he's found now when we go out? He'll eat a Caesar salad. Is it as good as my spinach salad? No, but he's still getting some salad. He's getting some greens and some veggies. So just be patient with the food thing, model it, and use common sense with more fat and protein. Avocados are great. Nuts are great for your kids who aren't allergic to them. And I'll try to hit on some more of those things at another time. Okay, I think what I'm going to do is... I'm just trying to decide here because this has already been kind of long and I can save some of this for next week. So here's what I'm going to do next time. Strong-willed, reactive six-year-old. Is this just self-help stuff? I'll answer that. Son who gets angry, aggressive, mean, and stubborn. I think we kind of hit on some of that today, of getting to the root reason and then giving a different way of dealing with that. And then... let me end on this one because this was good, and this was a mom who emailed in, and I've got it right here. And it was such a great question. I want to answer this one. So name is Gwen, if you are listening, and here's the deal. What's the best way to deal with individuals who comment that doing things differently or accommodating kids who are different will make them stand out and make them targets? You know, they're kind of standing out. Or, you know, this mom said, hey, these kids are kind of born to stand out. And we get these continual negative comments and advice from people who aren't as open-minded and they're kind of judgmental. So what are your tips for calmly asserting yourself with these individuals? It may be an in-law, parents, it may be a teacher, you know, doing this. So and the final question is, well, how do we deal with teachers who don't kind of get this? So let me run through a bunch of things. One with teachers. We train more teachers, I believe, than any other organization in the country. One of the beauties of this program is we can, on the same day, train hundreds of teachers. We can get all the schools together in the area, train teachers. We train parents. Casey can train your kids on the same day. We are pretty much booked now, for the most part, through the spring into the summer. But we're booking now. We have a few open dates for May, June. But what we're really looking at now is August, September, October, kind of back to school time. Let's hit it hard. So reach out to us. We'll show you how easy this is. We can train everybody, all three stakeholders in the school. Do that. If you have the Brain Booster CDs, give them to the teachers. Don't give them all four discs. Just give them one in particular and say, hey, on this disc number two, track three and four, could you listen to that? Because I think that will help you with my son, and it'll probably help you with a lot of other kids in class. But here's where I really want to go with this. Give other people insight into your kids. You don't apologize for them. Just say, oh, yeah, you know what? I know Evan, he struggles with that. And part of the reason he struggles is because his brain is wired like this, and he needs some order and structure. He does really well when we stimulate his brain. So here's what we're doing at home, and it's working really well. We do these three things. So could we apply that to the after-school program? Could we apply these things to my son has anxiety, so whenever we go someplace new, I give him a specific job or responsibility to do so he can be focused on something very concrete. So when he comes to after-school program, when he comes into Sunday school, when he comes into your classroom, can we try these three things and see how that works? We can, for kids who do need the help, we can go the IEP, the Individualized Education Plan route, which is really a legal document that you have with schools. We're going to be hitting on this a lot soon. I recently put this on Facebook post. I want to know what you're struggling with, because we have a team that is working on this, very, very good team. We're going to roll out a conference. It's going to be free in the D.C. area, I believe on Saturday, May 7th, of how to work with the schools, how to come up with accommodations that really work, blowing apart the myths that we have about special education of, oh, well, my son is too smart, or his grades are too good to get an IEP. That's not true. That's just a lie. So we'll help you with that. So let us know. But here's where I want to end this today. I'm tired of being defensive about our kids. I'm tired of apologizing. Well, I'm sorry he's so different. No, I'm glad my child is different. I love that he's different. And I'm going to go on the offensive, and I don't want to be offensive, but instead of like cowering and being so like apologetic, I want to say, no, you know what I like about my son? I love the fact that he needs to move while he learns, because that's how people learn for the first several thousand years of history. In fact, that's what the research and science show, is that when you use rhythm and you stimulate the senses and when you get some movement, that's how people learn best. And you know what? That's how my son learns best. So he's completely within the norm in doing his work that way. You know what? When he's asking you why, he's not always being disrespectful. He's not challenging. What he's looking for is he's looking for some context. He wants to know the bigger picture. So if he asks you why, try to give him the bigger picture and then tell him, say, hey, you know what? Do you have a different way that you think you could get this problem done? Do you think you have a different answer to this problem? Because I would love to hear it, because I want to promote, I want to encourage your curiosity. So start taking a different approach here where you don't apologize. You just give people insight into your kids and why they do things, and you let people see, oh, yeah. You know what? Because when we do this at workshops or in our program, they get to see, oh, you know what? I do that in my life, too. Like, I ask people questions. Yeah, you're asking for clarification. You want to do it a different way. Well, your kids are no different. So thank you so much for tuning in. You can find us. We've got lots of new people listening in. You can find us at CelebrateCalm.com. We've got a free newsletter. You can sign up there. My email address is Kirk@CelebrateCalm.com. Remember, this week, everything that comes in, including boot camp registration, we are donating to charity. We are going to match that. Let's make this a huge week, because the big win is you get to see changes within yourself, within your family, and we get to help and change military families and families that are struggling as well. Be bold with us. Be assertive. Call and bother Brett. Email us, and keep enjoying your kids. We love you all. Hope to see you all soon. Bye-bye.